Welcome to GhostBiz. Here on the Business Report, I'm Gary Strubel. I chat to the finance ghost every week, find out what's going on with the biggest companies and the markets here in Southern Africa. Ghost, welcome to the show. Let's start out with Pepkor. We've seen a mixed bag of results from some of the retailers. A lot of guys saying it's a bit of a soft economy, but Pepkor seemed to indicate that even in the current times, there's growth possible. Give us a breakdown.
Hello, Gary, and all the listeners. Nice place to start there on Pepkor. Good choice, because that business is absolutely flying at the moment. And importantly, they are doing it after we've seen some pretty crummy numbers coming out of the sector, specifically the Fashini Group. They gave the market a pretty nasty negative surprise, and quite soon after their capital markets day, which didn't win them any friends out there, I'm afraid. Pepkor, on the other hand, no shortage of friends, because they are just doing really, really well. They released a trading update for the year ended September, and the headline story, I guess, is that revenue is up 12%, which is solid. So clothing and general merch up 8.9%. Their fintech business jumped by 31.1%. Such a good driver of growth there. But here's the thing that is perhaps most interesting, is their furniture, appliances, and electronics segment. That revenue was up 7.2%. Now, that is pretty decent. And if you think about it, those are clearly consumer discretionary categories. You're not buying furniture, appliances, or electronics if you are, you know, completely out of cash, let's be honest. There was actually a company, New World, that also released results. Very obscure company, like no one really ever talks about them. They are a pure play on appliances. And their results a few days prior, or in the same week, indicated a pretty decent increase in revenue as well in these consumer discretionary categories. So that really does call into question excuses from retailers around the state of the South African consumer, because actually the consumer seems to be doing okay. And Pepkor has certainly figured out how to address their needs. Headline earnings per share from continuing operations at Pepkor will be up by between 18% and 28%. So at the midpoint, that's in the low 20s, really, really strong results. And they also now released an announcement that they have closed the acquisition of Legit and Boardmans and a couple of other brands that they've bought from Retailability. So they will now work to get those synergies in place, etc. So yeah, Pepkor, very strong story, good organic growth at the moment, some solid acquisitions as well. They're just getting things right.
Now, one of the bits I like having a look at is your Ghost Nibbles. That's in, on your website, ghostmail.co.za. If you go to Ghost Bites, there's a Ghost Nibbles section where you talk about director trading, etc. A very interesting award here. Sean Summers, who's achieved the first milestone of his turnaround at Pick n Pay, received an award of 56 million rand. This is despite Pick n Pay losing 500 million. Can you just explain to the common man how that works?
Yes. The common man indeed, i.e. me and you both and everyone listening to this, people who don't get 56.6 million rands worth of shares just for getting some milestones in place. Look, I have some choice views on executive remuneration myself. I do think that in some cases it is somewhat over the top, but it is what it is. That's how the system works, and shareholders are generally accepting of it, because the theory is, in a business the size of Pick n Pay, if Sean Summers does turn out to be the guy who can do it, then the 50 bar or 60 bar being paid to him along the way is a drop in the ocean versus the value that would, in theory, be created. Now, what's interesting here, and the reason why this stands out and is slightly jarring, is because Pick n Pay's core Pick n Pay supermarkets business is still doing really badly. Yet here we are with a nice juicy share award that is bigger than most people would earn in their lifetime, let's be honest. So it's related to milestones around getting leadership structures in place and getting like-for-like sales growth on a decent trajectory. And credit where credit is due, this has happened. The like-for-like sales growth has improved at Pick n Pay. It's still not great, but at least they have stopped losing a lot of ground to their competitors in terms of market share. So fine, you know, first step achieved. But now comes the really hard stuff, because Pick n Pay, as I said, it's still loss-making in their core business. And they expect to still be loss-making, in fact, to a similar level in the coming year. I think that was the big negative surprise in the recent financial update, was that they expect their losses to kind of stay steady now for a bit before improving again, in theory. I mean, I've been pretty bearish on this turnaround throughout. It's very, very difficult. It's going to be a great outcome almost no matter what for someone like Sean Summers. He's going to make a lot of money. There are going to be other people involved who are also going to make a lot of money for rolling the dice and seeing if they can get it right. I remain uninvested, I suppose is the right term. Not invested. Take your pick in Pick n Pay. It's just too hard for me. Grocery turnarounds are really tough. And being on the other side of the coin to the likes of ShopRite, it just feels too difficult.
Let's take a look now at a company that recently, last month, as recently as last month, listed on the Namibian Stock Exchange as a secondary listing. That's African Bitcoin Corporation, previously called AltVest. They had a fairly convoluted model to start with, and a pivot into crypto equally has one or two guys scratching their heads. They have managed to do a cap raise, but not particularly successful, and have now bought a Bitcoin. Tell us more about that story.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting ones on the local markets. I mean, AltVest, now called Africa Bitcoin Corporation, has certainly dished up plenty to talk about over the past few years. If you look on their website, actually, so I mean, basically everything is now just Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. And they have this line there where they say public, regulated, unapologetically Bitcoin. I mean, fair enough. They are trying very hard to push this narrative and to actually get people excited about them becoming a Bitcoin treasury company. But unfortunately, it's also very hard to look through the reality, which is that they have more Bitcoin logos on their website than they have Bitcoin on their balance sheet because they've just bought their second one. I mean, that is not a lot. You know, each one is worth like 1.8 million rand. We're talking about 3.5 bar roughly sitting in Bitcoin. And for this reason, everything has been rebranded Bitcoin and there's all this pomp and ceremony around it. And when they went to market to try and raise money for this strategy, they really only managed to raise, it was just over 4 million rand effectively. So not exactly the floodgates opening, that's for sure. And something that's a little bit strange for me is they raised, yeah, it was just over 4 million and they've deployed about 1.9 million to buy a Bitcoin. So what are they doing with the other over 2 million rand that was raised for Bitcoin? It's a bit strange because if the thesis is, well, we're going to raise money, we're going to buy Bitcoin as often as we can, then that's what should have happened. If they're holding back because they're not sure about the price right now on Bitcoin, then suddenly they start to sound like a Bitcoin trading company as opposed to a Bitcoin treasury company, which is something completely different. And then if they actually retain their capital because they need it for other expenses, then all they've done is they've raised just over 4 million rand from investors who thought they were getting Bitcoin, when actually what they're doing is putting half of that into Bitcoin and the other half is going to be eaten up in expenses. None of these outcomes are good in terms of any of those three options. So I was kind of surprised to see that only a portion, less than half actually, of what they raised went into Bitcoin. They raised even less in their credit opportunities fund. I mean, literally a tiny, tiny number. So yeah, the market is really not supporting the story, unfortunately, at all. And I can't really blame them because the reality is that AltVest has been slightly schizophrenic with this one. And again, there I've used the word AltVest by accident because that's still the brand I have in my head, because that's the brand they spend so much energy building. And now it's all but gone. If you go onto their website, it's gone. You've got to really dig into stuff like the AltVest Credit Opportunities Fund to actually still find that brand. Everything is just Bitcoin. And I'm not sure that a relatively risk-averse, loss-averse South African, and I'm guessing also Namibian investor population, particularly want to throw their money at this, especially because they can go and buy Bitcoin themselves. So why take the risk on giving your money to a listed company in the hope that they will use it to buy Bitcoin like they promised, when you can just go and buy the stuff yourself on one of many platforms? I just don't get it. I haven't gotten it from the start. I still don't.
And then lastly, let's look at the telecom sector, where both South African giants, Vodacom and MTN, are exposed to the African continent, although neither of them are trading here in Namibia. But it seems to tell a story that more often than not, telecoms companies are seen to be low growth environments. But both Vodacom and MTN have some really good stories to tell. Is it a change in climate, or was there something revolutionary happening inside those businesses?
Great theme to pick up on there, and certainly very interesting. And really, what's changed is a macroeconomic situation around Africa. So, if we think back over the years, the local telecoms names, specifically MTN and Vodacom, They grew to the point where they were effectively what's called ex-growth in South Africa. In other words, it'll kind of just tick up now with inflation at best. They can't really hope for much more than that in South Africa. So once your home market is saturated, then you've got to go and try and find, well, you don't have to go try and find growth elsewhere, but if you're a listed company, then you do. If you're a private company, you can just sit back and collect your dividends and, you know, go and watch the Formula One in Monaco once a year. It's a nice life. We can all dream. But in public equity land, you've got to actually keep showing growth. And so this drove MTN and Vodacom to go and do transactions in Africa. And it's been a very mixed bag, as we know. I mean, there have been times where MTN was in huge trouble. They were struggling to get cash out of places like Nigeria. They had too much debt at the top of the group. It was really looking quite dire. Vodacom historically was actually in somewhat less volatile markets. They had quite a lot going on in places like East Africa. Definitely less risky, or at least it has been, than West Africa. So what that created was a situation where the MTN share price would bounce around like an angry Jack Russell. And the Vodacom share price was a little bit smoother, but just less exciting. Vodacom seemingly got jealous of what was going on at MTN for whatever reason, and then decided to roll the dice on a big transaction in Egypt, which suddenly thrust them into volatile currency land as well. So now we have both of them sitting with deep exposure to risky African markets. And the reason why both are doing so well and have been doing so well is basically nothing to do with the South African operations, because there's just not enough growth here. It's everything to do with the state of play in Africa, with currencies having stabilized. And all of this is thanks mainly to what's happened with the weakness in the dollar, the policies of the Trump administration around tariffs, etc., and what this has actually meant for the global view on the dollar. There's been a lot of geopolitical noise around this stuff, and it's actually given emerging markets a bit of a break. It's made emerging markets more interesting for investors who are now worried about what's going on in the US, for example. Outside of AI, the US market has not really been fantastic in the past year. So all of this stuff adds up to a good year for emerging markets. And I think maybe the lesson here is where emerging markets are doing well, and especially frontier markets like we find in Africa, the local telecoms are actually a really good way to play it, because they have pretty dependable businesses provided the macroeconomics stay in one piece. Lots of underlying growth across lots of different services, fintech, data, etc. All very interesting. And now, of course, there's a new name on the JSE that would participate in that, being Optasia, which is essentially, it uses smartphones effectively as a way to distribute stuff like airtime credits, microfinance solutions. So telcos are some of the distribution partners that they have, and then banks on the other side. And they basically provide the bridge between the two, take on some of the credit risk, and away we go. So yeah, it's pretty cool to have another new name on the JSE that plays into a relatively similar theme, albeit in a very different way. This is, of course, what makes the markets so interesting.
All right, guys, let's leave it at that. Thank you very much. Thank you for making us Namibia's number one business podcast. You can get this episode and all previous episodes wherever you pick up your podcasts. You can also drop us a line. That's tbr@nova.com.na. Let us know what you'd like to hear about, and give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Thank you, Ghost. We'll be back next week with more Ghost Biz.